Big 12 teams start their seasons focused on the conference title. Kansas State and Iowa State will battle to rule the league's Northern Territory. Heisman hopeful Seneca Wallace has the Cyclones competing for the crown. Scrambling, tight strokes down inside the 10. Look at him! Looking for a block, gets it! It's just as hard to get a hand on Kansas State's Earl Roberson. He's run the Wildcats into contention, evoking memories of K-State legend Michael Bishop. Two field generals lead their teams to a Big 12 North showdown next on TBS. For the last 12 years, homecoming has been synonymous with Kansas State success. And tonight in Manhattan, the Wildcats want to make 13 a lucky number. And we welcome you to Big Play Saturday, presented by Best Buy and T-Mobile. This series has been played every year since 1917, but no game between number 21 Iowa State and number 12 Kansas State has ever been bigger. And tonight, in perfect conditions, they meet in Manhattan, Kansas. And when you take a look at the North standings, it is obvious why this game is so big. Colorado, that overtime win over Missouri today, holding on to that one-game lead over Iowa State and Kansas State. Now, let's take a look and see what these three teams have left remaining on their schedule. Colorado still must play Iowa State and Nebraska. Iowa State, only one Big 12 game remaining. Kansas State, tough road. Nebraska and Missouri, they still have to play both. Hello again, everybody. Along with Charles Davis, I'm Ron Thule.
Well, welcome in. Final KSO Classic of the year, and it's a good one to get everybody in the mood for Farmageddon on Saturday as we get ready to talk K-State, Iowa State 2002, top 25 matchup in Bill Snyder Family Stadium. Oh, Seneca Wallace this, Seneca Wallace that. Just turns out that he might be the worst quarterback to ever play a game inside of Bill Snyder Family Stadium. I mean, turnovers galore, disastrous mistakes, penalties all over the place. And this top 25 game was a breeze for K-State because it was really over by halftime, but the final score was hit by the third quarter, and there was a lot of coasting that was able to be done. So this is a game that the only thing that I knew from it was that Bobby Walker had essentially back-to-back pick sixes. He had two of them in three plays. And that's about all I knew. And that's from my time working at K-Man with John Kurtz, where he would talk about Bobby Walker and what he did to Iowa State. That's all I knew from this game, but I also knew that K-State won by a large margin, and I figured this is a good one to send us into Farmageddon.
I had actually watched this game during like the start of the pandemic. I got really bored with no live sporting events on TV. So I went through and kind of did like my own KSO classic with a few games that like I would pick out that I was like, this is like a historically significant game that I either A, don't remember, or B, wasn't alive for. So like one of them that I watched was the Cotton Bowl when K-State beat Tennessee. This game,
which is by the way, probably a game that we do in the next iteration of this.
Yes. Yes. That game probably deserves us to talk about it. Same with 2011 A&M, which is why I saved it. Another game that I watched that was like historically significant that I didn't really remember anything of, was 2000 Nebraska. I think that I also watched both iterations of K-State playing USC. We were talking about like a gross KSO classic game. The first USC game would kind of be in that category, 10-6.
Yeah.
But this was a game that I kind of knew a pretty good amount of just because I had watched it pretty recently. We wanted to do an Iowa State game. The Big 12, of course, decides to wait till the very last second to get the Iowa State games that we wanted to do up. And really, this game of why we chose it kind of stems a little bit, at least from my perspective, of why I said that we should do this. We saw the 0-2 team play already in this series against Arizona State. That was not the best for that 0-2 team. So getting to see them kind of at the peak of their powers was really fun and made it a lot more enjoyable because, like, you know, we've talked with people that were, you know, really alive and there, and players even that were there for that like 02, 03, 98, 2000, all of that run. And everybody talks about how good that 02 team was and how they think that that 02 team might be the best that K-State was. We didn't really see that in the Arizona State game. We saw that in this one.
Yeah, and I think part of it's just the way that games were played back then. But yeah, you look at K-State in this 02 season, like they were right there. They lost by 4 in Boulder, and they lost by a field goal to Texas. And those were their only two losses of the season. And they beat the crap out of basically everybody else except for USC and Arizona State. Those were one-score games. Outside of that, it was just domination after domination. And so, yeah, this team, you can see it from what they did, but then you go back and watch and you get to see a game like this, and you're like, holy cow, like, I'd love to see what it looked like for them, in that 64-0 thrashing of KU that season. Like, that'd be a fun one to go back and watch. And you see all the other things, like, that USC game. I think that's another one that we'll probably do in the future. Honestly, both of the USC games you talked about, we think we might do a string of gross ones. Yeah, the game that was played in LA was pretty gross, but we can also talk a lot of crap on Troy Polamalu for being a scumbag. And his dirty hit on, I think it was Aaron Lockett. This team was awesome. And then you just see how this game plays out, and it's like you get the best of L. Roberson. Obviously, Darren Sproles is the best running back in K-State history. And, they had a lot of different weapons that would step up and serve their role well in other spots. And then this defense, we know the linebackers are phenomenal, and you have certainly had playmakers in the secondary, Terrence Newman being one of them. But then here's Bobby Walker he had 5 picks at this point in the season once this game concluded, and 3 of them had been pick sixes. Like, pretty electric and a sign of what things look like under Bill Snyder in 1.0. So we will get in.
Oh, go this ahead. Is the season that when Fan does the non-offensive touchdown chart, this is the one that will like never be touched.
Yes.
This season, the amount of non-offensive touchdowns, absurd.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get on into it here. This game most notably was on the Superstation, TBS, big play Saturday night. We'll dive a little bit into that as things move on in the future. But, I enjoy seeing the different TV partners and how it all works. And honestly, like, it's one of those things that I really enjoyed. I thought we've talked so much about production value, but I kind of like the music of it. I like some of the things that they tried to incorporate into it. They definitely tried to make it a special but still like kind of laid back type of big game environment. It was playing to maybe a different audience, not like a standard sports broadcast, but I thought it was really enjoyable getting to see how it goes. And Ron Thulin is one of those guys that was an icon on calling Big 12 games, because not only did he do it for TBS, but he also did it for FSN. And then Charles Davis obviously went from doing this to being the lead analyst for Fox when K-State beat Oklahoma in 2012. And Erin Andrews had her ascent from big play Saturday night to being ESPN's number one sideline reporter, and now she's the number one at Fox for NFL coverage. Like, there's a lot to like about this, and certainly Ernie Johnson's a big part of that too. But
and even Craig Sager.
Craig Sager. To send 2 sideline reporters, amazing. And then they turn out to be, if you had a sideline reporter Hall of Fame, like, there's no doubt that Erin Andrews and Craig Sager are both in it, and probably first ballot sideline reporters.
Oh, easily. So I've enjoyed seeing all the different TV partners. We've had a game on Versus. We've had a game on TBS. We've had a game on CBS, ESPN, like in its infancy. We've had, ABC.
We saw FX in the 2011 season.
FX. Like, we've seen so many, and it's been so fun. And I've had so much fun doing this. This has been my favorite off season at KSO, because we've done like this and the quarterbacks have thrown rankings. So everything's been good. Vibes are extremely high about this game too. We'll and we can dive in and talk about it.
Yeah, we will. We will do that. We didn't give a uniform matchup for the game earlier today, but you know, I would have been pretty low because those Wyoming jerseys were terrible. This one's even worse for me. Has nothing to do with K-State. It's a 1.4. I mean, Iowa State. What the heck are we doing here? The jerseys are terrible. The design's terrible. And it's Russell Athletic. I mean, at least it wasn't, you know, Under Armour or Aeropostale. You know, I think Aeropostale was hot in the streets back in this day. Or there were a bunch of other weird ones. Like, this is that time where everybody was just signed with everybody. But Russell, you look like a bunch of scrubs out there wearing Russell Athletic. I'm not even talking trash on, like, Russell Athletic for, like, their regular stuff during this time period. Totally fine. I had a pair of Russell Athletic shorts that I'm pretty sure used to belong to my dad when I was, like, in high school. Might have been the second most comfortable pair of shorts I had, so I was cool with it. But no, not on the jerseys. Get Russell out of my jerseys.
This is a 3 for me. I'm not as low. I just think that, number one, the K-State uniform looks the exact same, so, like, that, whatever. Yeah. But this, not the jerseys and uniforms, but this logo for Iowa State is their best one.
Yeah, I would agree. It's got the most character. It's fun. I think you should bring this one back. Nothing about your logo now says Cyclone to me. Just and also, you can't make your logo be I-State. And I don't think anybody has ever referred to them as I-State.
No, I do like that now. I think that their traditional uniform will have, like, Cyclone script on it. Like, I like that, but bring back the tornado bird.
Yeah. Yeah, bring back spinning Psy. Getting dizzy out there. The game starts. Iowa State goes out, does nothing on offense. Pretty common theme for the evening. And so the K-State offense takes the field, and, you know, we've seen quarterbacks introduce the starting lineups for their teams. Instead, we got L. Roberson in this game telling us what the K-State offense is going to do. And let me tell you, you can glean a lot from what he said is about to happen.
Hi, my name is L. Roberson. My major is secondary education. And what we're going to try to do today against Iowa State is a little bit of mixture of everything, run the ball and also pass the ball, mix in a little option with it and just throw the ball up and let our receivers run underneath it and just play wildcat football and keep the ball in between the white lines.
Yeah, really, wildcat football, their MO is running the football.
So really, K-State's just going to play offense, is what L said there.
Yeah, his compared to Seneca Wallace could not have been more different. Like, Seneca Wallace was, like, kind of like diagnosing what Iowa State was going to do. L, I think, was told by Bill, when you get up there, you're going to say the most generic things possible. We're going to run them. We're going to hand the ball off. We're going to run the option, and we're going to throw the ball.
Well, I mean, you know,
they're going to run offense.
If you're one of the people that subscribes to the KISS theory, keep it simple, stupid. It obviously worked out in this game because K-State won 58-7. So I would say their offense played a little bit better than Iowa State's. L. Roberson, the guy couldn't have been more spot on in this game. They did run it a little, and they did mix in a little bit of the option, including on the first touchdown of the game.
Pick up 7 on first down gives you a lot of opportunity to do other things like run the option. Gets the seam to Pater. Roberson, touchdown.
That's a tough shirt look for Dan McCarney, by the way. Those were not attractive. But yes, L. Roberson finds the end zone for the touchdown. K-State goes up 7-0. And you got to see in the corner of the end zone there, the Saba zone, just a banner for, an Io Saba fan club. We'll get to him later on in this game because he also finds the end zone. Pretty electric way to start a big game. You get a big pop play like that, and it's, you know, with your dynamic quarterback. I'd kind of like to see Avery Johnson do something like that on Saturday.
Would not hate it. This game, with how it started, with Iowa State doing nothing, K-State getting the ball and immediately scoring, I feel like even back then you could tell, oh, it's going to be a long day for Iowa State.
Yeah, and they found out rather quickly on the very next drive because Seneca Wallace fumbled the football.
Iowa State needs to get something going, and Seneca Wallace is going to be dropped as he handed off, but the ball is down. And Kansas State has it. Great penetration, though, by that Kansas State defensive line. They came right through. Josh Buell came through. He's the one that came up with the football.
So that was just the first turnover of many on the day for Iowa State. It would later set up a touchdown that we'll get to in a minute. But yeah, you're right, Drew. I mean, the L touchdown already gives you that vibe. And if you're an Iowa State fan that was in Manhattan, you're probably going, oh my gosh, we wasted our time driving down to this.
The funniest part, I think, of that entire play was how far away Terrence Newman was, ran in, and was signaling K-State ball. He was so far away.
Like, guys just love saying it's their ball, even if they have no possible idea of what took place. Well, it wasn't very long after that that K-State made everybody pay because they were able to punch it in with another touchdown.
Yeah, a couple of tight ends now for Kansas State. Roberson takes it in, waiting for the signal. Penalty flag is thrown. It is a touchdown.
So you get the touchdown on the quarterback sneak from L. Roberson. I also want to set this up. So K-State has the lead now. They go to break. They come back, and it's time to go down to the sideline. And we talked about this after the 09 KU game that we watched, and we said, you know, the crowd surfing thing, and we made note of it. Scott Walker was like, they used to do that after, like, every touchdown. That was the thing. And Aaron Andrews got to the bottom of that and even did some herself, which led to a creepy comment from play-by-play man Ron Thulin, which, you know, is par for the course in like this 10 to 15. Well, really, from about 2012 and before that, play-by-play guys north of 55, it's kind of just what they did whenever a younger female was involved in a broadcast. So here is the touchdown one more time, and then Aaron Andrews reporting from the student section.
Yeah, a couple of tight ends now for Kansas State. Roberson takes it in, waiting for the signal. Penalty flag is thrown. It is a touchdown, but we have a penalty flag on the ground.
Welcome back to Wagner Field, where Kansas State just scored a touchdown, and we told you earlier how crazy these fans are. Well, they just scored a touchdown, and the tradition is after a touchdown, they crowd surf.
That's going to give some young man some very nice dreams the rest of today.
That, we have one brave colleague, don't we?
A line drive kickoff. It is Wagner at the two. And Kansas State swarms him, and another penalty flag comes flying in.
Honestly, props to Charles Davis for trying to, like, pick his guy up right there and realize, I don't know that this is the alley we want to be going down, Ron.
Yeah, Charles Davis, great teammate, because that's all that Ron Thulin had to say was, wow, we have a brave colleague, or just don't say anything and move on.
Yeah, there are plenty of ways to go about it. Doesn't seem like great, especially in the current day and age, but hey, that's, you know, how things go, I guess. But you also saw there a nice hit after the kickoff, and another penalty flag coming in. That was a common theme throughout this game. In total, there were 21 accepted penalties on the day between both teams, totaling 161 yards in penalties. It certainly made a difference in this game with, I guess, the yardage. You look at it, K-State scores 58 points, but they're under 400 yards in the game. Those two pick sixes also had a big deal to go with it. Iowa State, and they totaled almost 250 yards in the game and only managed 7 points. So the penalties were significant when they took place in this game. So K-State goes back out on defense. They're up two scores, and Iowa State has a little bit of fight in them. They're about to make it a one-score game after a touchdown. But before that, the Cats get penalized for disconcerting signals, and we got to see a common face in this. Brett Bielema, the TV cameras loved him during this era, and we got to see him go ballistic on the officials. So here's about a minute of Brett Bielema just giving it to the refs.
It took away a great return.
Yeah.
And it was huge field position. Couple that with the pass interference call against Jordan that took away an interception, negated an interception against Kansas State. And you see why we're down where we are with Iowa State having the football.
Disconcerting signals on the defense.
Disconcerting signals. That is a first.
Have not heard that one in a long time. You know what that is?
They were barking.
Well, you're barking out calls that sound similar to the quarterback's cadence. So, in other words, if they say the word go as their signal,
right,
down, set, go, 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 and you're on the other side saying show, 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 they will nail you on the defensive side for trying to jam the signals. And that's not a call I've seen used or heard in a long time. As we take a look at the Kansas State bench, highly exercised on that side.
I'm telling you, you gotta be careful though.
Not a call you get every day. Fortunately,
nope.
Here, 15 yards will not be it, but it'd be half the distance to the goal line, right?
Yep.
And a first down.
Which is about, 8 inches?
And you don't.
So Brett Bielema not happy. Iowa State would go on to score their only score of the ball game.
And like Charles Davis pointed out, I don't think that it was necessarily that call that made Bielema go ballistic, but like two plays before, K-State gets an interception and a very weak pass interference is called. And I think that kind of sparked it. And as we know, we saw it this past year when Illinois played South Carolina. If Bielema doesn't like something, he's going to let you know. But I also love how Bill is just standing there. He's like,
letting go. I was kind of surprised. And I'm honestly, the refs, they were so flag happy in this game. I'm surprised they didn't try to, you know, throw a flag on Bielema there. But yeah, that interception that got taken away was bogus. And it just, the over involvement of the officials in this game, it really doesn't stop. And it's most of the time when officials become the point of ire, I think it's typically when teams lose, but I think this is a good example of a game where you go and say, look, it's not just when my team loses. My team can win by 51 points, and I can still think that the refs were dog crap in a game, and this is the perfect example of it because the refs were horrible in this game. Too many penalties. They were calling things back. They were, you know, there were more plays in this game, too, similar to the Copper Bowl that replay probably overturns or does something different on. It was including one of the Bobby Walker pick sixes, but it was not a good day for Cooper Castleberry and the crew.
And what's bad is like how bad they were both ways in this game. Like there was one play, like you talked about, the Bobby Walker pick six probably gets overturned now.
Mm-hmm.
K-State had the bogus pass interference, also got blocked into a punt returner, but was called.
Yeah, they had both teams got called for a kick catch interference, and it's just like that flag's not getting thrown today if those plays happen. It was insane. K-State gets the ball back though, and they're ready to answer. They move it down the field. They're inside the 10-yard line, and it's time to go to one of their backs, Io Sava.
They have the big three in the backfield. Roberson keeps it. In their score package, they call it Nick, Vic, and Thick. That's Thick. Iu Saba, the 6 foot, 260-pound true freshman out of Blackwood, New Jersey. 7 touchdowns this year for the youngster.
And there you go. There's a look at the score formation. Nick, Vic, and Thick. Iu Saba, that is a big man. 6 foot, 260. Checking in, running the football for K-State and finding the end zone there. Also shout out to Iu Saba on YouTube for posting a lot of games. And salute to anybody that goes and posts any game, current or old, on YouTube, because we definitely probably used parts of your game at some point. But you know, that's like, this game had everything. If you're thinking about this era of K-State football, you got the Iu Saba score, you got a defensive score, you got explosive runs from the quarterback. Darren Sproles was great. It was phenomenal. So K-State at this point is up 20-7, and when they decide to come back from the break, another little nice TBS big play Saturday night production, The Rant. And I would just Love to know where some of these K-State fans are now, hopefully watching or listening to this episode of the KSO show. But here is the rant with, I don't know, some people would say they should be embarrassed by it. I think you embrace it. I think this was phenomenal.
Field position tonight. Well, we brought our soapbox to Manhattan, Kansas. Let's see who jumped on it this week. 23rd of the big game house.
I mean, that was phenomenal. Also, shout out to Leah from Rossville. Actually, very close to her prediction on how many points K-State was going to score. I think she did 68 pushups there and said they were going to get to 68. They got to 58. That was pretty good.
Yeah, that was extremely close. Like, we need more of like stuff like that now.
And, you know, Ryan Baldessaro, like, that's a good idea. They took away hitting the opponent at midfield in an official pregame. Maybe there needs to be an unofficial, you know, fan or mascot hit in the parking lot or something before every game. And, you know, somebody can go post it on Twitter or something. That way everybody can see it. And you can still kind of get the vibes from it. I'd also, speaking of Rossville dogs in the house, wonder if Cole Manbeck knows who Leah is in this. But yes, that was, I thought, another thing. It's like, you just don't get that in broadcast anymore. They're not going to send somebody out there with a camera 2 hours before the game and get stuff like that. So that was really good.
You're definitely not getting that now, because sometimes you don't even get announcers that are there.
Yeah. Well, we'll jump ahead in the action and get you to your regularly scheduled Darren Sproles touchdown.
Her name, he goes, oh, you don't mess with her.
You didn't call her, did you?
Grandma's got to be happy right now. Straight up the middle, Sproles looking for Pater, touchdown!
Something that aged well from this game is L. Roberson's grandma always being talked about on broadcast, because we also experienced that in the 2003 Nebraska game where they had to have a little talk about his grandma. So that's significant there. And K-State well on their way to just cruising into halftime. But the oil started to leak even more for Seneca Wallace, because one of the three nasty Texans was going to secure the first interception of the game. It would not be the last just before the half ended.
Stuck and Florida State escaped. Well, they're going to need Seneca Wallace if they want to come back. Intercepted Kansas State. Brian Hickman with a pick. His third of the year.
Yep, so there you go. A look at the three nasty Texans from Josh Buell, Brian Hickman, and Terry Pierce. And, I mean, I think this is one of the other things that TBS did so well in this broadcast, is getting into kind of the lore of these teams and highlighting stuff like this. Like, you got really good backstory and understanding about the players and the programs, as opposed to just being like, oh yeah, generalities about K-State or Iowa State. Like, there was serious investment here put in by the announcers and then also the production staff. So just another one of those things that I don't know that you're going to get these days.
Yeah, they did an awesome job. I mean, the Nick, Vic, and Thick little montage that they had, the three nasty Texans one, like, they were ready to go with everything for K-State. And like, it just makes me sad sometimes watching all these things that, like, used to be what would be called like the bare minimum and like broadcasting for a college football game now feels like foreign, because nobody does it anymore.
Yeah. So K-State doesn't get any points before they go to the half. So it's 30-7 at halftime, but that's a sizable lead. You would think, hey, that's probably safe with K-State. Second half begins and they leave little doubt, because the first play we had to show you from the second part of the game, is the first pick six for Bobby Walker.
If Danielson gets to the sidelines, that's more trouble for the defense.
His fourth 100-yard game receiving. Seneca Wallace with a play action. Looking, throwing, picked off. Bobby Walker's got some running room. Bobby Walker, touchdown, Kansas State. Wait a minute. Iowa State saying he fumbled before he got in the end zone. He was bobbling it.
Maybe a touchback.
Maybe a touchback.
He didn't belt. They determined he's in.
Barrett Newman doesn't like the call. Or he likes the call. Bobby Walker, his fourth interception.
Yeah, so there you go. First pick six of the game, probably 100% would not have stood if happened in 2025, but it happened in 2002. So deal with the consequences, Iowa State.
100% gets overturned now and is a touchback. But also, like, what I wanted to point out after all that was insane how pissed off the Iowa State players were about that call when the game was already 30-7.
Yeah, that's the thing. You look back on it, it's like, I get why you'd be upset. And this is how most teams and people would react, is it's like, oh, you're not even going to give us a chance here or whatever. It's like, game was over at this point. Like, this isn't like, you know, K-State's only up a touchdown here and that snowballed the rest of it. Like, it was pretty much out of way. Like, this is more like 1985 Royals Cardinals in game six, the Don Denkinger call. Versus their 1985, as opposed to the 1986 World Series where the ball goes through Bill Buckner. Like, the Red Sox had already started to implode at that point and had done other things to where it's like, okay, if you're going to make Bill Buckner be the scapegoat for, you know, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner. Like, that's – I can see a little bit more of the Cardinals side of thing if you want to be like, you know, well, Don could have gotten the call right there. But again, 1985, no replay, deal with it.
But this was way more of like Bill Buckner, because the game was already in hand. This would, even if this gets overturned, that's still the third Seneca Wallace turnover already.
Yeah.
And he should have had four if it wasn't for a pass interference that was pretty weak. And then he throws another one anyway. So good on you, number four, for taking your helmet off and looking distraught for no reason.
Yeah, two offensive plays later, so they run the first down play, and then on second down, coming back from the pick six, Seneca Wallace decides one wasn't good enough, he needs another, and you also get a look at his very dejected offensive coordinator.
Remember we saw that, the Florida State game, Iowa earlier this year?
And another pick off by Bobby Walker, and another touchdown by Bobby Walker!
Yeah, so the coaches were going through it in the press box.
The coach, second from the right, that was just drinking water and acting like everything was fine, had to be a defensive coach.
Yeah. Yes. The defensive guys were like, man, we gave up 58 points today, but we really didn't have much of a chance. We gave up two defensive scores. And then a lot of these turnovers gave K-State the ball like inside the Iowa State 50. I mean, at one point, they showed the starting field position for K-State, and I think it was on the Iowa State side of the field. So K-State now is – they're only 14 points away from how many they're going to score in the entire game. There's 10 minutes left in the third quarter, and they get the next touchdown via Darren Sproles.
He's held on to the ball pretty well, although he got away with one tonight earlier.
In those five games, he's averaging 6.5 yards a carry. Here he goes again, left side.
So it's 51-7 at this point, and Seneca Wallace decides he has not given the ball to K-State enough. He's a very generous man. The broadcast has already talked about, like, do you sit Seneca Wallace now? They were doing that after K-State scored with 10 minutes left in the third quarter. Well, Iowa State has continued to put him out there, as Craig Sager reported, like, well, they're trying to just end on a good note, give him some confidence, give the team some juice. And unfortunately, the juice was never going to arrive because he just kept stepping in it.
It'll be 7 o'clock Eastern time, November 23rd, and that's why OU is not going to be number one tomorrow. How far will they fall, though?
I think they'll settle in about number four.
Wallace loses the football again. Kansas State has it again. My goodness.
I just, the shots of the coaches, they also kind of were just men that had funny looks to go with it. And when they're upset, it's just, yeah, I can't take you seriously with your generic ugly looking team shirts there. But Travis Wilson would later punch in a touchdown from a few yards out and make it into the end zone. And it's 58-7 in the third quarter.
You know, we had talked about like the 09 KU game. Todd Reesing didn't play his best against K-State.
Yeah.
This was like a quarterback meltdown. I've never seen a quarterback play this bad before.
Yeah, like, I don't know that you're going to ever find anything worse from Seneca Wallace.
Three interceptions and two fumbles and should have thrown four picks and fumbled twice. That's
all right.
Insane work.
Drew, I spoke too soon. You are going to find something worse from Seneca Wallace because later this season, the very last game of the year, it was already shown in the intro on what was left for Iowa State to play against UConn at home. Seneca Wallace, 19 of 44, 216 yards, four interceptions, no touchdowns, and Iowa State lost to a 6-6 UConn team, 37-20 at home.
Yeah.
At the time, this was like the best Iowa State team ever.
That is pretty rough.
Yeah. So it did not get better for Seneca Wallace. In total, like I mentioned, there were six turnovers in this game by Iowa State. And really, I mean, you can put probably all six of them on Seneca Wallace, the way that they ended up working out. So it was a struggle and certainly a fun one to look back on for that. So that is what we got to go over in the kind of the rundown. What's the best play from this game for you, Drew?
The best play, not actually a lot of good options for this game as opposed to the Copper Bowl, because there was no like huge like standout play. But it's just, for me, the iconic moment of this game is Bobby Walker having two pick sixes and three offensive plays for Iowa State.
Yeah. I to specifically give one, I think the second Bobby Walker pick, because it's what makes the game iconic, I think, is that you had the two pick sixes and three plays by one player, and it's just a total, like, their back was already broken, but it's like, now you're really finishing the job, and the whole thing, it makes it way funnier. So the second pick six, and it was better by Bobby Walker because he actually scored on that one and didn't fumble the ball out of the back of the end zone in all actuality. So I give the second one better props. Especially, I mean, the first one, what was Seneca Wallace looking at to throw the ball to?
It's not like the second one was much
better. No, that's true. It was just the first one, I was taken aback. I was like, what was he thinking here?
All of the Seneca Wallace picks are my worst play. I think that's what you were about to ask me.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the worst play? Here's the thing. I gave the fumble after K-State goes down and scores and makes it 7-0, and then he's just giving the ball to him inside the red zone. I think that's the worst play because that set things in motion for this to be just a total blowout.
I mean, that probably makes some sense, but no, you're giving me all of the picks because I think all of them, including the one that was called back, you're like, what the hell are you looking at, dude? Yeah.
Again, funny is the word to use to describe this game. What age? Well, my first one, Turner as a broadcast partner, because this year TNT is going to have select Big 12 games. So they have gotten back into the college sports space, and you're going to get to see some Big 12 football and basketball on TNT Sports this coming year. So I give props to Turner for getting back in the game.
Yeah, that was the first thing that I had written down as well. I'm super excited for it. I'm kind of lukewarm about the people that are going to be involved at Turner.
I like Mike Golic Jr. as the analyst, though. I'm a Gojo guy.
Yeah, Golic Jr. is good. The play-by-play guy, never heard of. The studio crew, at least from the outside, I want to see them in a game first, but looks rough. So that was the first thing that I had written down. The other thing that I have that aged well kind of goes just with TBS in general, how stacked this lineup was that was calling the game. Charles Davis, Ernie Johnson did the studio work for this game, was awesome. Craig Sager on the sideline, Aaron Andrews on the sideline. Like, having that stacked of a crew for like what wasn't necessarily like the premier channel of college football at that point in time just made it feel so much bigger, because you're like, oh, all of these people are like awesome now.
Yeah, that's the thing. You look back on this, and that was the second thing I had written down, was this team, but specifically Charles Davis and Aaron Andrews, because of their ascent that they went on from here. You know, like Craig Sager, he was just like a Turner lifer. So this was like a side gig for him, because he was their number one for NBA sidelines. He would do like baseball playoffs when they had it. But this entire crew, like for Ron Thulin, who is an icon of this era for Big 12 football, he's bottom of the barrel for this. Like he's 4 out of 4.
Yeah. He is the worst one. And he is like a lot of what I think of in this era of college football, it is Ron Thulin and then Petros Papadakis.
Yeah, and Joel Myers. Joel Myers. That's my Mount Rushmore of Big 12 football pre-realignment. Something else that aged well from this game, Drew, I don't know if you caught this at one point, but there was an ad read for a very specific website.
Oh, Rivals.
Yeah. We got an ad read for Rivals.com. Now, if you brought this up a year ago, I would have said this would have aged poorly. But since then, there has, speaking of realignment and mergers, Rivals is with us now, and they've upped their game once again. So shout out to Rivals for the brand lasting and that logo that Shannon Terry very wisely reverted to. I don't know what. I hope none of them work here with us anymore, or they take no offense to this. I don't know what they thought they were doing with their little rebrand that they did within the last year. So I'm glad it's back to the OG Rivals logo. But yes, we had a Rivals.com ad read during this game.
Yeah, I saw that. I had that written down. See, we're getting good at this. We're on the same page a lot.
Yeah.
The last thing that I have down is just this version of the Iowa State logo will never be topped for them.
Yeah. It's good. Things that age poorly. I only wrote one down, Drew. Ernie Johnson's hair. And not because he ended up losing it, but because I actually think Ernie Johnson looks better bald than he did with hair. So that's why it aged poorly is, you know, there are some people that it's like, no, you need to be bald. Like, you pull it off. He's one, like Scott Van Pelt. You see videos of Scott Van Pelt with hair. You're like, dude, you're way better as a bald guy. You're a bald icon. Ernie Johnson, same boat right there.
The one thing that I have written down is Russell Athletic that you already hit on. Those jerseys, disgusting.
Yeah. Real quick, one other thing that I want to point out that aged well, I love a lot of the Nike gear from this time frame. And we saw it in The Rant, which I would say The Rant aged well. the guy that ended up winning it, the shirt that he had, or not him, but when they came back and they were talking about him, there was a shirt in the student section that just had Manhattan in the font that K-State was using at the time with the Nike logo. It was clean, but a good looking shirt. I would love to have a shirt that was just that simple. Now I like, just a little subtle nod to everything going on. Moving through it. How would you grade the broadcasters? Because I think there's a lot of good in this team. There's a lot of nostalgia, but also I can admit that Ron Thulin was not at his best.
Yeah. This is like a B plus for me. I think that Sager was good. Aaron Andrews was good. Charles Davis was good. Ron Thulin had some moments. We already talked about one with Aaron Andrews. We kind of glossed over it a little bit, but saying that Terrence Newman didn't like the call of Bobby Walker's touchdown.
Yeah, that was the one where I was like, he slipped up a little bit there.
Was pretty bad. But B plus, because the other three kind of carried Ron Thulin in what was not like a great call by him.
Yeah, I had to give it an A minus just because of how great everybody else was, and that extends to Ernie Johnson being involved in the broadcast the way it was. I like the entire vibe of the TBS production. I like the music. I like the graph. Like, just everything they did, I thought was so good and so fun. Like, if broadcasts were still like that with modern technology, I'd be all about it. So TBS gets high marks for me in this game. But, you know, that's what I've got to give on the broadcasters there. All right, moving through this now for everybody. MVP of this game, I mean, it has to be Bobby Walker, right? Like, this is the Bobby Walker game.
Yeah, I have Bobby Walker with an honorable mention to L. That of all the games, we've seen three L games now. This was his best game.
Yeah, you're right.
That we saw. Like, he was under control of the offense throughout. There was no throws that I was like, holy crap,
L. And he had a really good one. It set up, it was on the drive that ended up leading to the Iosaba touchdown, where it was a pretty hard rollout, and he just delivered a bullet to Thomas Hill that ended up going for, I don't know, like 30 yards or something. And that was like, he was very pinpoint in this game with his decision-making and his throws. And yeah, we really hadn't seen that in the first two L games that we watched.
And he was also very good on the ground in this game. So like, this was like L at his peak, because we've saw some rough L games.
Yeah.
0-3 Nebraska, he wasn't very good when we watched. He made up for it with big plays, but also had some really bad turnovers, had some really bad throws. Mm-hmm. The Arizona State game, you probably still have the graphic queued up with how poor he was throwing the ball in that game.
No. That one's not there anymore. I'm not going to throw that up anymore.
So there was just points where like, it's like, okay, what of L like was his best moments? And I think that this, and then eventually again, a game that we're going to do is probably the 03 Big 12 championship game.
Yeah.
Those are probably the two best L performances.
Yeah. Nope. I would agree with that. Anyways, we'll move on. And I have one more notable moment from the broadcast. I've already talked about the rant. We talked about Aaron Andrews crowd surfing and Ron Thulin, you know, perving out for a second there. We also got a graphic promoing next week's game on Big Play Saturday night. Do you remember what the game was and who was on the graphic, Drew?
I actually do not.
It was a promo for number one Oklahoma, who had just lost to Texas A&M on this same Saturday. They were going to face Texas Tech. The face on the graphic, none other than Cliff Kingsbury, a young Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, look at that hairdo he was going for there.
That is quite that is the haircut that Craig James would have made fun of.
Yes, that would have been Craig James' son's Chili Bowl haircut that he alluded to 9 years prior. So, yeah, there you go. Okay, think about that for a second, Drew. This game is 9 years removed from the Copper Bowl that we watched. That's like us getting ready to watch K-State and Iowa State this weekend, being 9 years removed from K-State going on the road to Stanford to start the season. That my freshman year of college, that's how the distance between the Copper to this game versus where we sit today in 2025 to the game in 2016.
That
just weird to think about.
That is insane to think about. I was a senior in high school for that opening game at Stanford. So like that is kind of wild to throw out there.
Ugh. You want to know how much of a sicko I was? So, you know, that's Memorial Day weekend or whatever, Labor Day. I always get them confused. Labor Day is the last one. I stayed back Friday night instead of going home. I went back Saturday morning, but I stayed back because I was like, I mean, it's my first K-State game in college. Like, I want to be in Manhattan for it. I didn't do anything other than just watch the game on a TV, but I was like, why would I go home and watch this with my parents? So I just was, you know, I just sat in my dorm room by myself, hardly anybody else on my floor, watching K-State get beat by Christian McCaffrey and Stanford.
I was about to say, and you also probably watched it by yourself because we have the same dots about watch parties.
Yeah, and well, and like there were probably only two other guys on my floor that I could have watched the game with, and they absolutely went home because they were sophomores and they weren't too weird anymore. And then like nobody else was there. And my three roommates, like they could give a rip about the football games and how that was going on. So yeah, that shout
out. You were just dedicated to the grind. I wanted to watch it in Manhattan for,
I was, I mean, I can remember I broke a hanger that I threw across the room when Matthew McCrane missed a field goal at West Virginia that season. That was like, you know, okay, they're not going to win this game. That was frustrating. I watched them run all over Baylor in the basement of Goodnow that year. So, but yeah, Brett Platner, shout out to Brett Platner for being the guy that would have stayed back to watch the game with me if he was there. I did sleep on their couch one night after some of my roommates came back violently drunk. I was like, I'm not dealing with vomit all night long. So I went and he and our RA, they were roommates. They just left their door unlocked at all times. So I was like, well, they got a couch in there. And he woke up that next morning and he heard somebody snoring and he looked down and it was me. Also same morning that Jose Fernandez died. So a little lore for you there.
Also, Randon's boy.
Yeah, there you go. Not Randon's boy, but tough. Yeah. There you go. All right. Final thoughts here. You got a random player from this game that you noticed or wanted to throw out, or you maybe just want to say their name again.
Honestly, no, just because we had already watched an 0-2 game before, and like 0-2 and 0-3 were just very similar. And nobody really for Iowa State outside of Seneca Wallace. It was really super noteworthy. But, you know, Iowa Sava scoring in this game is awesome. Like, that's part of the lore of this game. It's like he also scores.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. That's what I had written down. Where like he's not really a random player because he would fit the bill of that given his usage. But like I think he's so much of a cult figure in K-State football that like a lot of people, certainly people that are going to watch and listen to this, they know who Iyo Saba is. Like we hadn't seen a lot of games from this era. We knew who Iyo Saba was. So I think he's the answer, but it's like not necessarily to the same extent as some of these other games or like, you know, where you go and watch Oklahoma has a bunch of these future NFL all-pro receivers walking around the field when K-State.
Or like the one earlier today where like Leon Edwards scores a touchdown in the Copper Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That is what we got for you on everything else. Do you have what ifs from this though? Because we already did 0-2, we did 0-3. Then like we know what the what ifs are in 0-2. Like if K-State beats Colorado, they play for the Big 12 title, and there's I think a good chance that they win this. Like we are looking here 0-2 in 2011, in 2003, in 2012. There is some mirroring there in some ways. Now 0-3, like the team started off a little bit of a struggle, but like in the aspect of 0-2, they popped. And if they just have one of those tight games go the other way, they either win the Big 12 in 2011 or they're at least playing for it. And I think this team was good enough to win it, obviously, as you know, a lot of people think. Like that's really the only one, but we've already discussed that if you win that game against Colorado, you're probably back-to-back Big 12 champs in 0-2 and 0-3.
Yeah, I don't really have a what if from this game just because of that. I totally forgot that I had another what aged poorly. Oh,
throw it at me. Game.
Iowa State season. Because they go from 7-3 to ending this year 7-7, and then Seneca Wallace ends up throwing more interceptions than touchdowns.
Boy, that I mean, we talked about the UConn game already, but I'm looking here at how he finished out his career. So from the K-State game on, so they beat Missouri the week prior to this game, 42-35. After that, they go to Colorado. They lose by 14. He throws another pick in that game. Not horrible, though. He throws four interceptions in that game against UConn that they lose 37-20 at home. And then in their bowl game, they go and play Boise State in the Humanitarian Bowl. By the way, That was the bowl game played in Idaho at the time. So this was played at Boise Stadium, which I, you know, maybe I give them a pass for, but they lost to Boise State 34-16. So yeah, I mean, that's, you go from being the best team ever at Iowa State to 7-7 and not much to show for. And, you know, supposedly this awesome player in Seneca Wallace, 26 touchdowns and 27 picks in his career at Iowa State.
He ends up having a pretty long NFL career. So, I mean, I guess that is something.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that, give him credit for it. 05 to 2013, he lasted in the league with Jobs. I most remember him as a Cleveland Brown, but he was only there for a couple of seasons. He spent most of his time with Seattle, made 22 career starts in the NFL.
I was going to say, I definitely remember him most on the Seahawks. So I don't know how you remember him the most on the Browns.
I don't know, especially with all those quarterbacks that start for the Browns. 31-19 touchdown to interception ratio in the NFL. So he was a better quarterback in the NFL than he was at Iowa State. That's no other way to determine that other than a touchdown to interception ratio, I'm sure. Exactly. Although I'm looking at it, he led the league in interception percentage in 2008, like in a good way. He was 1.2% of his passes were picked off, which I don't know. And he made 8 starts that year and played in 10 games. So, like, it's a legit leading the league there. He came a long way from his time at Iowa State.
From this game specifically.
Yeah. A long way. What's your game score for this one? How would you rate it?
It's like an 8.8 for me. Not like my favorite game that we've done, because I think that was easily the Copper Bowl. But it was better than a lot of other games that we've done. High scoring. We saw the 0-2 team at the peak of their powers. Saw a ranked matchup against Iowa State. I meant to put that down for something that aged well, because the last 2 years now, it's happened.
Great call.
But I totally forgot to say that and write it down. So that's kind of on me. But like it was a fine game. It was a blowout. Nothing really crazy happened in the game, like in the Copper Bowl. Like, you had like 3 great plays, and then you also had like the Copper Bowl just felt like so much of a celebration because it was the bowl game, where this is a regular season game, but still a fun game to go back and watch.
And like at the time too, like this would hit differently because the K-State-Iowa State rivalry doesn't truly become a thing or explode into, like, you know, this was a rivalry in terms of the teams had played each other every year since 1917. So Iowa State's always on the schedule. But it doesn't become like, you know, there's hatred infused into it like I think there was at this time. It would have just been between KU and maybe to some extent, like, you get a little bit from Nebraska because now you've become a legitimate thorn in their side. But, like, it's not – it wouldn't – if K-State goes out and wins 58-7 this Saturday, which they won't, but if they did, it'd be pretty cool if they did. I would take it. Wouldn't turn it down.
It would be freaking awesome if they did.
But it would feel a lot different, like on a higher level than what it did in 2002, just because, you know, it was Iowa State. Of course you beat them 58-7. Now it's like social media has made this thing explode and turn into what it is.
And both teams are a lot more competitive. Like, Iowa State was kind of like a notch above K-State, and that's why, like, one of the first things that you really see in K-State when you go back and look at, like, what happened from like 89 to like 98 that really, like, transformed how K-State played. One of them was, like, Bill was very able to beat Iowa State, because Iowa State in this era was pretty terrible.
Yeah, they were not good. Just to give you the insight on that there. So when Bill takes over in 1989, K-State loses to Iowa State. They would only lose 3 more times before Bill hung it up for the first time, including 2 of those being his last 2 years at K-State, 04 and 05. 93 was the other one, interestingly enough. We talked about it earlier today with the Copper Bowl season. And then he comes back, and his only loss to Iowa State in 2.0 is the final game that he coached in Ames. So, yeah, like, that's one that you notice. Obviously, we know the emphasis that was put on, like, winning the game against KU. And so Bill takes over, and he loses the first 2 to KU. gets that first win in 91, loses again in 92, doesn't lose again to KU until 2004. And as we know, he comes back and never lost to them in 2.0. The same thing I would point out also happened. Like, he got on a run there against Missouri where there was domination from 1991 until 2005. K-State lost to Missouri just one time in that stretch in 1992. And then Ron Prince comes, they lose all three. They lose the first two of Bill being back, and then he goes out with a win against Missouri and Gary Pinkel in 2011 that we got to talk about a little bit last week. So those three things were pretty significant to the advancement of K-State football. Like, you're absolutely right. They came in and they beat your three most common opponents of all time. You came in and you beat them pretty religiously once Bill Snyder started. And that was a big move for them.
And now it's not as common, and it's not like a knock on Chris Klieman. It's more of like Matt Campbell has done it at Iowa State to where they aren't like terrible.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the years that, like, you look back, and especially like Dan McCarney, who was at Iowa State forever, they rarely had winning seasons. Like, Iowa State now, it is very rare for them to not make a bowl game. Like, McCarney had one season where they went 9-3, and then four seasons where they won seven games. Every other season, when he was there from 95 to 2006, they had a losing record. Like, that is why, like, it's not as common for K-State to beat Iowa State now. It's because Iowa State isn't, like, a team that's going to go out there and from 96 to 98 win six total games in a three-year stretch.
Yeah, I don't know. Fun game to look back on, and obviously just iconic to get the Bobby Walker pick sixes in there. And hopefully it sets up for some good mojo for K-State and Iowa State this weekend in Dublin. This is the last you will hear from us in an official capacity until we land boots on the ground in Ireland. So enjoy everything that we've got set up for you. Hopefully it's enough to carry you through the next 36 hours or whatever it's going to be. Math.
It's gonna be the longest day ever for me tomorrow.
Yeah, we're probably looking at like over the next 40 hours from now, we'll be at K-State practice in Dublin, and then we'll have some more for you there.
And it will be like 5 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the afternoon Dublin time. Like, it's gonna be ludicrous that first day trying to figure out what time it is.
I'm excited for it. Looking forward to it. Also, tomorrow. Right. Tomorrow we get our first Big 12 availability reports.
Yes, we will be in the air then.
Yep. See, it sounds like 9 o'clock at night is when those are going to go up to accommodate to the teams out in the western portion of the conference.
Which, by the way, stupid as heck that even like this weekend they're like, 9 p.m. Central time.
Yeah, that's true.
It's going to be – there's one Big 12 matchup this weekend. That's a Big 12, which is the only ones that you get the injury report for.
Well, and the other – I mean, the other one, like KU's playing Fresno at home. So, like,
yeah. Can you not make it to where, like, it makes logical sense for people that are in Dublin covering the game? Like,
hey, real quick.
We're all going to drop at 3 a.m. Dublin time.
Game started. The game, like the game intro for this, did you see the guy in the purple and white stilts? What do you have memories of those guys just wandering around? Like,
100%. I have memories of
those. What happened to those guys? Why don't we see the guys on stilts anymore?
Somebody is going to tell us the reason.
Yeah. But like, and I know like there were the guys in the parking lot. This guy was like on the pavement around the field. Like, I don't know. That was
just insane.
One of those things that, you know, from our childhood that is just going to be something that pops up from time to time. We'll share stories about it, just like the cat train. And my kids are going to be like, what the heck are you talking about? Like, you sound like you're on drugs. Stilts and a cat train?
Man, our last full off-season video, that's crazy. It's time.
Yep. Football season is officially here, unofficially, and we'll have you covered in Ireland. I'm going to do my best to document the trip for the people to see how KSO carpools on an international trip. I'll do my best. I'll probably forget and just mail it in at some point, but I'm hoping to give the people something here. That'll do it for us today, though. Thanks for watching KSO Classic for one final time this summer. We will likely bring it back next year because it'll give us something better to do than just make stuff up.
Bring it back. You don't even have to say likely.
Yeah, it'll be back unless I'm fired by then. So we look forward to next summer and also this weekend because we get the real games that actually matter these days. So for Drew Galloway, I'm Mason Vo. Thanks for watching and listening to K-State Online.